Long after, another tern arrived. This time, Mac caught it. Using his teeth to rip the feathers out, Louis soon felt a tickle on his chin. The tern was teeming with lice. Louis rubbed his face, but the lice burrowed into his beard and hair. Frantic, he pitched his upper body into the water. Realizing Louis was going to get his head ripped off, Phil and Mac grabbed the oars and bumped the sharks away while Louis splashed. Finally, the tickle was gone. As the days passed, the men caught a few more birds. One kept dipping low over the raft, then soaring off again. Mac suddenly shot his hand up and snagged the bird by the leg, then handed it to Louis, who was amazed. The men ate every morsel. For days, Louis lay over the side of the raft, fish hooks on his fingers, trying in vain to catch another fish. Day after day passed with no rain, and the thirst was agonizing. Twice they rowed toward squalls, but each time the rain died out as they reached it. When the next squall passed, they were too weak to chase it. On the sixth day without water, the men knew they weren't going to last much longer. Mac was failing especially quickly. They bowed their heads together as Louis prayed. If God would quench their thirst, he vowed, he'd dedicate his life to him. The next day, the sky broke open and rain poured down. It gave them just enough water to last a short while longer. If only a plane would come. Chapter 15. Sharks and Bullets. On the 27th day, a plane came. It began with a distant rumble, then a spot in the sky. It was a bomber, moving briskly west. It was so far away that expending the flares and dye was questionable. The men decided to try. Louis fired two flares, drawing vivid lines across the sky. He spilled dye into the ocean, then used the mirror to angle light toward the bomber. The men waited. The plane faded away. As the castaways slumped in disappointment, there was a glimmer on the horizon. The bomber was coming back. Crying with joy, Louis, Phil, and Mac waved and called out. The plane dropped, skimming the water. Louis squinted at the cockpit. He saw two silhouettes, a pilot and co-pilot. All at once, the ocean erupted. There was a deafening noise, and the rafts began hopping and shuddering. The plane's gunners were shooting at them. Louis, Phil, and Mac clawed for the raft walls and threw themselves overboard. They swam under the rafts and huddled there, wincing, watching bullets cut bright slits in the water around them. Then the firing stopped. The men surfaced. The bomber had overshot them. Two sharks were nosing around. The men had to get out of the water immediately. Trying to get onto Louis and Mac's raft, Phil floundered. Louis gave him a push, and Phil slopped on board. Mac, too, needed help. Louis dragged himself up, and the three sat, stunned but uninjured. They couldn't believe the airmen, mistaking them for Japanese, would strafe unarmed castaways. Beneath them, the raft felt doughy. Bullets had struck it. It was leaking air. The bomber turned and flew toward the rafts again. Louis hoped the crew had realized their mistake and was returning to help. As the plane closed in, its side passed into view. All three men saw it at once. Behind the plane's wing, painted on the fuselage, was a red circle. The bomber was Japanese. As Louis turned to dive in the water, Phil and Mac didn't move. They were too weak to go back in the ocean. As the bomber flew toward them, they lay down. Phil pulled his knees to his chest and covered his head with his hands. Mac balled himself up beside him. Louis took a last glance at them, then dove under the rafts. The bullets showered the ocean in a glittering downpour. Louis saw them pop through the canvas, shooting beams of sunlight through the raft's shadow. After a few feet, they spent their force and fluttered down, fizzing. Louis pushed against the bottom of the raft, trying to get below the bullets' lethal range. Above, he could see the depressions of Mac's and Phil's bodies. Both were still. As the bullets raked overhead, the current began dragging Louis away. He knew if he lost touch with the rafts, he wouldn't be able to swim hard enough against the current to get back. As he was pulled loose, he saw a raft tether, grabbed it, and tied it around his waist. As he lay underwater, his legs tugged in front of him, Louis looked at his feet, watching his sock flap in the current. Then, in the murky blur beyond it, he saw the huge, gaping mouth of a shark emerging out of the darkness and rushing straight at his legs. Louis recoiled, swinging his legs to the side, but the shark kept coming, directly at his head. He remembered the advice of the old man in Honolulu. Make a threatening expression, then stiff-arm the shark's snout. As the shark lunged, Louis bared his teeth, widened his eyes, and rammed his palm into the shark's nose. The shark flinched, circled away, then charged back. Louis waited until the shark was inches from him, then struck it again. Again, the shark peeled away. Above, the shooting had stopped. Louis pulled himself along the tether, grabbed the raft wall, and scrambled aboard. Mac and Phil were still, bullet holes all around them. Louis shook Mac. Mac made a sound. Louis asked if he'd been hit. Mac said no. Louis spoke to Phil. Phil said he was okay. The bomber circled back. Phil and Mac played dead, and Louis tipped back into the ocean. As bullets knifed the water around him, the shark came at him, and again Louis bumped its snout and repelled it. Then a second shark attacked. Louis hung there, flailing his arms and legs, as the sharks snapped and the bullets shot past. The moment the bomber sped away, he clambered onto the raft again. Phil and Mac were still unhit. Four more times the Japanese strafed them, sending Louis into the water to kick and punch at the sharks. Each time he emerged, he was certain Phil and Mac would be dead. Impossibly, though there were bullet holes around the men, even in tiny spaces between them, not one bullet had hit either man. The plane returned, and Louis dove again. The bomb bay doors opened, and a depth charge, an underwater bomb, rolled out. The men braced for an explosion, but none came. Either the charge was a dud, or the bombardier had forgotten to arm it. Louis heaved back onto the raft and collapsed. When the bomber passed again, he was too tired to move. The gunners didn't fire. The bomber flew west and disappeared. Phil's raft was slashed in two. Shrunken and formless, it lapped on the ocean surface. The men were sardined on Mac and Louis's raft, its canvas speckled with dozens of tiny bullet holes. Both of its air chambers were punctured. Each time someone moved, air sighed out, and the raft sat lower in the water. The sharks whipped around it, wildly excited. As the men sat, exhausted and in shock, a shark lunged onto the raft, mouth open, trying to drag a man off. Someone grabbed an oar and hit it, and it slid away. Then another shark jumped on, and after it, another. The men wheeled about, frantically swinging at the sharks. As they swung and the sharks flopped up, air was forced out of the bullet holes, and the raft sank deeper, Soon the men's legs were underwater. If the men couldn't reinflate the raft immediately, the sharks would take them. One pump had been lost. Only one remained. The men hooked it to a valve and took turns pumping. Air flowed into the chamber and seeped out through the bullet holes, but if the men pumped very quickly, just enough air passed through the raft to lift it. The sharks kept coming, and the men beat them away. Louis groped for the patching kit, and as Phil and Mac pumped and fought sharks, he began the laborious task of gluing patches on the bullet holes. Sharks kept snapping at him. They began stalking about, waiting for a moment when an oar was down or a back turn before bullying their way aboard. Over and over they lunged at Louis from behind. Mac and Phil smacked them away. Hour after hour the men worked, clumsy with fatigue. All three were indispensable. Had there been only two, they couldn't have pumped, patched, and hit sharks. For the first time, Mac was truly helpful. Night fell. In the dark, patching was impossible, but the pumping couldn't be stopped. They pumped all night. So drained, their arms went numb. In the morning, the patching resumed. The rate of air loss gradually lessened. Once the top was patched, they had to patch the bottom. All three squeezed onto one side of the raft. They deflated the other side, lifted it up, turned it over, and let it dry. Then Louis patched as the other two pumped and struck sharks. When that half was patched, they reinflated it, crawled onto the repaired side, deflated the other side, and began again. Finally, they could find no more holes. Because bubbles kept coming up from below, they knew there were holes they couldn't reach. They had to live with them. The patches had slowed the air loss dramatically. They cut back on pumping to once every 15 minutes or so by day, and none at night. With the raft reinflated, the sharks stopped attacking. The crisis over, Louis and Phil thought about the bomber. They thought it must have come from the Marshall or Gilbert Islands, which were probably roughly equidistant from them. It had probably been on sea search and likely took off at around 7 a.m., a few hours before it reached the rafts. Estimating the bomber's cruising speed and range, they made rough calculations to arrive at how many hours the bomber could remain airborne after it left them, and thus how far they were from its base. Crunching these numbers, they guessed they were about some 850 miles from the base. If this was correct, given they'd crashed about 2,000 miles east of the Marshalls and Gilberts, they'd already traveled more than half the distance to them, covering more than 40 miles per day. They'd had no idea they were so far west. Using these figures, they made educated guesses of when they'd reach the islands. Phil guessed the 46th day, Louis guessed the 47th. This would mean surviving on the raft for almost 3 more weeks. As frightening as it was to imagine what might await them on those islands, it was good to know land lay somewhere ahead. The bomber had given them something on which to ground their hope. Mac didn't join in the conversation. He was slipping away. Chapter 16. Singing in the Clouds. Louis sat awake looking into the sea. Phil slept. Mac was in a reverie. Two sharks, about 8 feet long, were circling placidly. Louis had banged sharks on the nose, but had never really felt their skin. Curious, he dropped a hand in the water and laid it lightly on a shark, feeling its back and dorsal fin. It felt like sandpaper. The second shark passed, and Louis let his hand follow its body. Beautiful, he thought. Soon after, Louis noticed something odd. Both sharks were gone. Never had the sharks left. Louis leaned over the water, looking down, puzzled. Without warning, one of the sharks Louis had touched leapt up at terrific speed, mouth wide open, lunging at Louis's head. Louis threw both hands in front of his face. The shark struck him head-on, trying to get its mouth around him. Louis shoved, and the shark splashed back into the water. A moment later, the second shark jumped up. Louis grabbed an oar and struck the shark in the nose, and it jerked back and slid away. Then the first shark lunged for him again. Louis saw an oar swing past, sending the animal backward into the ocean. To Louis's surprise, it wasn't Phil who'd saved him. It was Mac. Louis had no time to thank him. One of the sharks jumped up again, then the other. Louis and Mac clubbed at them. A moment before, Mac had seemed almost comatose. Now he was infused with energy. For several minutes, the sharks took turns bellying onto the raft. Finally, they gave up. Louis and Mac collapsed. Louis beamed at Mac, telling him how grateful and proud of him he was. Mac, crumpled on the floor, smiled back. He'd pushed himself beyond his body's capacities, but his frightened expression was gone. Mac had reclaimed himself. Louis was furious at the sharks. He stewed all night, scowled hatefully at them all day, and decided that if the sharks were going to try to eat him, he'd try to eat them. He and Phil made a plan. Spotting a shark about 5 feet long, Phil hung bait from one end of the raft. Louis knelt at the other end, facing the water. As the shark swam to Phil, Louis plunged his hands in the water and grabbed its tail. The shark took off, yanking Louis into the ocean and flinging him off. Louis bolted back onto the raft. Soaked and embarrassed, Louis rethought his plan. His first error was to underestimate the strength of sharks. His second was to fail to brace himself. His third was to allow the shark's tail to stay in the water, giving it water to push against. A small shark, perhaps 4 feet long, arrived. Louis knelt at the raft's side, tipping his weight back and spacing his knees. Phil dangled the bait. The shark swam for the bait. Louis clapped his hands around the tail and heaved it out of the water. The shark thrashed but couldn't get free. Louis dragged it onto the raft. As the shark twisted and snapped, Phil grabbed a flare cartridge and jammed it in the shark's mouth. Pinning the shark down, Louis stabbed the pliers through the animal's eye. The shark died instantly. Louis had been told the liver was the only edible part of a shark. After much sawing with the mirror edge, Louis found it, and it was sizable. They ate it with relish. Soon after, they caught a second small shark and ate its liver, too. Among the sharks, word got around, no more small sharks came near. The men's stomachs were soon empty again. Mac was in a sharp downward spiral. He rarely moved. His eyes, sunken in their sockets, stared out lifelessly. It was night, around the 30th day. The moon shone. The men slept. Louis woke to a tremendous crash and the sensation of weightlessness. His eyes snapped open, and he realized that he, Mac, and Phil were airborne. They flopped down together and twisted in confusion. Something had struck the bottom of the raft with awesome power. Then they saw it. Swelling up from the sea came a vast white mouth, a broad back, a tall dorsal fin. The animal was gigantic, some 20 feet long. It was a great white shark. As the castaways watched in terrified silence, the shark swam around the raft, exploring it. It paused, swished its tail away, then slapped it hard into the raft, splashing a wave of water into the men and sending the raft skidding sideways. Louis, Mac, and Phil clung to each other. The shark swam to the other side. Louis whispered, "Don't make a noise." Again came the mighty swing, the shower of water, the jolt. As the men huddled, around and around the shark went, playing with the raft, drenching it with each pass. Finally, the great back slid under,